This is a Jeff Galloway podcast.
Welcome to 3-2-1 Go the podcast. I'm John Pelkey.
And I'm Carissa Galloway, and we're bringing you stories from start to finish to keep the everyday athlete motivated to keep moving towards the next finish.
John, today we are joined by a rock star podcaster and human, Allie Feller of the Allie on the Run podcast. She has chatted with so many everyday runners and so many of the world's top distance runners. She knows running, and she also knows something we love, the New York City Marathon. Allie's a runner, a podcaster, a broadcaster, a mom, a Swiftie. She's all the things, and she's here with us today.
That's right, Carissa. We'll talk to her a little bit about her entire career, but we're going to focus a lot on the New York City Marathon. Listeners know I'm obsessed with it. You're a little less obsessed with it, but not much. And she has years of experience as a New Yorker, as a runner, as a an announcer, as just someone cheering runners on. So she's going to be a great resource for that. Can't wait to talk to Allie. And thank you all for listening. If you want to share a story, have a question, maybe there's a guest you'd like to hear, email us at 321gopodcast@gmail.com. And Carissa, let's do this. All right, Allie, welcome to 321 Go, the podcast. We'll start it as we start all of our podcast episodes. How are you? And let everyone know, where are you?
I am doing great. Thank you so much for having me. Fittingly, I just got back from a run, a brisk run, because I am here in Hopkinton, New Hampshire, where it is a balmy, actually, it's not terrible. It's like low 30s, cloudy. So, you know, not picture perfect, but I got out for my run and got back in time to wrap myself in many blankets. It is blanket season in my house, lest I turn the thermostat above 67 degrees. So
it's blanket season here, and it's like 50, and my thermostat goes on if it's under 70. So my children will be cold in their little beds.
And I complained about that my whole childhood. My parents kept the house too cold and I was miserable. And now that I am a homeowner and I know the cost of propane, it's cold in my house too. Welcome. Would love to have you as a guest.
Wool socks are cheaper than heating your home.
Yep.
Trust me on that one. Believe me. I'm wearing wool socks here and it's in the 60s. So that should give you an idea.
I feel for you.
How thin my blood has become over the last 40 years.
All right, Allie, we are excited to have you here. We're going to kind of angle this all about things New York City Marathon related. But before we dive in, I don't think we're going to have listeners who don't know who you are. But if they don't, I want to know if Allie is on an airplane and she's in the middle seat and the people next to her are like, oh, this is such a nice lady. Ma'am, what do you do? How do you answer that question?
I have not booked that flight and I'm wearing headphones. I'm such an extrovert, but just the thought of like middle seat talking to people, I'm out. I'm getting the next
But you
flight.
Gotta answer them. It's a very kindly older woman. No. She has a running shirt on. What do you do?
No, honey? And I do love talking to people. So I usually my opening line when people ask what I do is I say I work in the running industry. And then we need to make sure they don't think that I am running for a living.
Yeah.
Let's make sure they don't think I'm a professional runner. So then usually I'll say something like I have a running podcast and I do race announcing. And this is usually verbatim. So I'm the person at the finish line who says, you're doing great. And I'm the person at the start line who tells you where the bathrooms are. And maybe you have a similar response to that prompt. But yeah, I tell people, I talk about living. And then usually they say, you can get paid to do that. And I say, we have found a way. Yes. And it is the best job in the world. And so I have the Allie on the Run Show podcast. I am a race announcer. I am a race broadcaster. So from time to time during some of these big marathons, you can find me interviewing people on the sidelines and at the finish line of the major marathons. And basically, I get paid to talk nonstop about running. And I think I have the best job in the world. And I'm also a mom. I have a 6-year-old daughter and I have a dog. I have a 9-year-old dog named Ellie who has the best underbite in the world.
Very nice. We may need pictures of Ellie for the website.
As my dog sits at my feet. The website where John has no bio currently.
Yeah, I have no bio.
After a year and a half.
I'll send pictures of my dog. I'm perfectly happy with that. Or my cat.
But we'll put Ellie's dog on the website, but not your bio.
Yeah, I love this plan.
Yeah, normally people ask me that question, and when I say, you know, I'm a race announcer for distance race, I usually get patted on the knee and then didn't finish college, hon. And then, you know, I have to go. So, yeah, people don't know. People do not know how great these jobs are and how many different aspects of it you can have. But I want to start in the beginning for you, Allie, because people who listen to your podcast know this. Your background is in dance, which, by the way, as the guy with the musical theater tattoo. As a guy with a musical theater tattoo, anybody listening out there, the greatest athletes walking the earth are professional dancers. I will stick with that until the day I die. It's unbelievable. But how did you become passionate about distance running? Were there other sports in your youth? What brought you to this crazy thing that all these people are doing?
Yeah, no, running was punishment. I think like so many
exactly.
people, running was what you had to do if you were late. It was, you had to run the mile in fifth grade. Like, and so I hated it when it was on someone else's terms. I wanted nothing to do with it. Dance was life. Dance was everything to me. And I worked in the dance industry after I graduated from college. That was always the plan. And it wasn't until I moved to New York City and my roommate, who I met on Craigslist, she had all these medals on her walls. And I assumed she was like a heavyweight champion or something. Like, what are those? Like, you know, like the belts that they get. And no, she was a runner. And she was like, those are half marathon medals. And that was my introduction to running. And she was the one who encouraged me to get out and try running. I wore my little jazz sneakers because I didn't own actual running shoes. And I definitely don't recommend that.
No, I was like, oh.
Yeah, real bad, real bad. But I very quickly was like, I'm into this. And so it was sort of the product of living in New York City, barely making a livable wage to live in New York City. And I knew I wasn't going to keep dancing. I didn't want to be a professional dancer. And so it was like, what are my options? I can't afford to join a gym. I can't afford to do anything except eat dollar pizza. And I was doing a lot of that. So I needed some sort of exercise to stay healthy and feel good. And so running was that thing. I ran on the East River every day. I fell in love with running in Central Park. I ran my first race, which was a 4-mile race in Central Park, which is a pretty good first race to run. And I was hooked. I signed up for my half marathon, my first half marathon. I think it was that night, the same night as my first ever race. And yeah, caught the bug, fell in love with the community. New York City is my favorite city in the world. And it's great for a lot of things, but it is a really great place to become a runner. You have Central Park, you have the West Side Highway. And this was during the early 2010s. And so this was when the Twitter running boom was going off. And it wasn't like creepy at the time. I would tweet at 5 a.m. headed to Central Park, and I would meet like 8 people who saw my tweet and were also running. Wouldn't do that now.
Yeah.
At all.
No, I don't think
so
you
many reasons. But at the time, that was what we did. And so I made these amazing running friends, and I started blogging about running because, of course, we all had running blogs in the early 2010s. And that was my side hobby when I was on the commute on the way to my full-time job in the dance industry. And soon I just noticed a shift where it was like the amount of time I was spending talking about dance and wanting to go to performances was dropping. I still loved it, but my obsession with running was growing. And I've now made a career out of it, but that's what it was. I couldn't shut up about running. And so it was a blog, and then it was a podcast, and then it was race announcing seems fun, and just trying my hand in all these different areas of running. And now I am full-time in the running industry and haven't written a word about dance in several years.
It is funny how, you know, with the running and in triathlons too, it's like, let me tell you all about it. Like, it is this thing you do that's really hard and really challenging, but it's like you want to make other people do it too and like
We're
tell
so
them
annoying.
All about it. I know. John has done it. We got John in.
You're in it. We're doing it right now.
Yeah.
I'm so glad, Allie, that you brought it up, because I bring it up all the time. I played sports in high school. Not well. I was a terrible athlete. Played football and was on the track team. And you're right. running distances. You had your little warm-up run before track practice, but if you were late, oh, we're going to add a mile to that. Mm-hmm. If you if you're late for football practice, you miss a block. Okay, go run, run, run. It is always sold to you as a punishment. And for whatever reason, a lot of people have been able to get past that much more quickly than I've been able to at 60. And I haven't had a football uniform on since I was 17, but I'm still like, it's a punishment. And I have to get on the treadmill. What did I do wrong? What
you
can
get
I do?
To get on the treadmill. That's the key.
Yes,
that's the
I know. I'm trying.
The,
I'm
the perspective
trying.
Shift, right? Is doing it on your own terms and giving yourself like so many runners. And I know we all see this all the time is people are like, I want to be a runner. Like I want to run. It looks, you know, you all seem to be on to something. And just like so many of us, we sprint out our front door and 30 seconds later, we're like, running sucks. Well, let's slow down. Let's pace ourselves. Let's maybe throw in some walking. Like once we're doing it on our own mm-hmm. terms and we're making the rules and we're giving ourselves permission to make it fun, to make it a game. Like I fell in love with running because I was trying to see if I could get one lamppost further. And because 1 mile from my apartment was a dog park. And I was like, if I can just make it to that dog park. I didn't have a dog. I just loved dogs. I was like the creep hanging out at the dog park that knew all the dogs. All these things I should maybe not admit. But yeah, I think when you can make it play and when you can make it fun and when you switch from I have to I get to, it all sounds cheesy, but I am a very cheesy person and I've learned to own it. So
yeah. I was talking to Weston. We were doing one of our long runs like that he joined me on before the marathon. And I was telling him like the reason why I started running was because I had the Nike shoe that you put the chip in the shoe and then it would actually tell you on the computer how far you went. And like that was what I needed to know. Like yes. I needed to know like I went 1 mile. Cool. I can go further than that. And I had it's going to be controversial. Salazar was like my coach and I paid for like one 40 minute workout. And that was the only thing I did for like years. And it had like the Pussycats Don't Ya on it. And it was like Alberto Salazar.
Wait, I love the idea of Alberto Salazar choosing that song.
I don't know.
I'm sure he didn't, but in my narrative,
he was like, and now the Pussycat Dolls. and that was like all I would ever, that was why I started running. Cause I wanted to, it seemed like the same reason. Like, oh, I mean, I worked to run mm-hmm. Disney. So I was like, I probably should do this. It looks like I could do this, but I'm very motivated by that. All right.
I get it.
Johnny we have gotten him over the hump of running, but John loves all things race related. So just because he doesn't love to go for 26.2 miles doesn't mean there's not a passion there. You have such a passion for distance running. And why do you think that passion is so contagious? Because you connect so well with runners of every breed. Why do you think that is?
I think it's so, I don't know, accessible never quite feels like the right word, but running is really that one sport, that one activity, that one hobby where we get to do what the professional athletes do. And, you know, because you love New York, I'll bring it back to New York. I was watching a couple days ago, New York City, the New York City Marathon does their final finishers, the finish line after dark celebration, and no one does it like New York. And I work a lot of races and no one can pull it off like New York does. And it's like, these people are finishing 26.2 miles well into the night. I think the first year I worked final finishers, our final finisher came through at like 11 something at night. The winner of these races came through more than 12 hours prior. Like, but they all covered the same distance. They all did the same thing. They all put in the miles. They all trained. They all have that shared understanding of what it takes to run a marathon, a half marathon, a 10K, a 5K, whatever it is. And I do think that's a really beautiful thing. I think that the professional athletes are incredible for what they do. I really, though, am so connected to and inspired by the people who are getting their runs in at 4 o'clock in the morning before they come back and make the school lunches for the kids and they shower and they get off to work and they take care of everyone else and their needs. That's such a beautiful shared experience that you find all the time, but especially on race day, mm-hmm. right? These starting villages where there's 50,000 athletes. Yeah, it's a lot of nervous energy. Yeah, everyone's kind of freaking out. Yeah, everyone's using the bathroom about 800 times. And everyone just gets it. Like, it's such a cool place where people get it. And I know it's way oversimplified, especially in this climate, wherever you fall, to say that, like, running solves everything. It doesn't. But for 26.2 miles, we're not debating all of the hot button issues. We're not getting into it. You can if you want, but for the most part, it's a celebration. And I just think, I know the power that it's had on my life. Mm-hmm. It's changed my entire life. It's changed my relationships. It's changed my relationship with myself and with my body. When I was a dancer, I hated my body, hated it. Now I'm a runner and I love it. We don't get along all the time. I don't always compliment it the way I should, but like it's had such a powerful shift in my life. And so I can see that in others. And you see that at a finish line more than anything, although start lines are pretty good too. So again, I know it's so cheesy, but I just think people get it. Mm-hmm. You can go for a run with someone that you've never run with before, and I guarantee by the end of that run, you are going to know so much about this person because there's some kind of special bond when you're side by side with someone that just makes you share stuff. And I love that.
Yeah, it has a really unique aspect to it as well, because, you know, we've all been inspired by professional athletes in any number of sports throughout our entire life. But then, you know, you say 50,000 people. So there are, you know, 49,800 of them that are not professional athletes. And you will find that their stories may be even more inspiring and may actually have a lot more effect on your life. And I mean, I'm using the ubiquitous you are for all of us on your life, because you're not a professional athlete. You've maybe never tried to achieve something like this. And these people have all of the things that they've gotten over to get there. It's one of the joys of our Disney race. We have so many people because it's going to be fun. It's going to be magical as well, but you still have to go the distance, but you have an opportunity to tell your story to a lot of people. And that really is a great thing. All right. The only reason you're here, Ali, is because I'm obsessed with the New York City Marathon.
Okay, let's talk about it.
We're going to talk about this right now.
You used to live in New York City, so I'm very envious because I grew up in Washington, D.C., and my one regret is that I never did my time in New York City.
That's not your one regret. He never went to San Antonio.
I never went to San Antonio.
You can do that. You can go to San Antonio. Go to the running event next year. Isn't it in San Antonio? There you go.
All right. So I could still do all that, but I think I'm past living in New York.
No, I can get you a nice retirement home.
I don't have the earning potential, trust me, to live in Manhattan at this point in time. And who does, frankly? And congratulations, yeah, Allie, for you having that ability. But I want to talk about just the marathon itself for a minute, because you're in New York City. You're getting out there running. You're falling in love with that. The New York City Marathon's going on during these times. And, you know, like famously, people who live in New York feel one of a couple ways about it. Really, it's a neat thing. Or I can't get out of my damned apartment today. Please, God, make it go away.
Yeah, we don't like those people.
Those are usually, you know, celebrity people who can't get to their car to get to Nobu. And I know you got to go there, and I'm very, very, very excited about all of that, too, because my second passion is cooking over talking about why I still don't understand how anybody can run 26 miles professionally or otherwise. My body would not be able to do that. So my question is, the marathon itself, your growing interest in running, your growing interest in the marathon. When did you fall in love with that and say, well, now this isn't 4 miles in the park. This is the New York City Marathon. When did you fall in love with that? And when's that a goal for you?
2008. So I had moved to New York City. When I first started working in New York City in 2007, I was commuting from Connecticut, a beautiful 3 hours each way. Don't recommend. So once I finally moved to New York City, I was living in Manhattan. I was living on 102nd Street and First Avenue. And that fall, so I had been living in New York for just under a year, and one of my coworkers was running the marathon. And I wasn't really running yet. I didn't have a concept of the running community. I didn't understand what it meant to run a marathon. I certainly didn't know that it was exactly 26.2 miles. But I knew that Therese from sales was running the marathon, and it was a big deal to her. And so another colleague, Amanda Marion, she was like, let's go watch Therese run the marathon. And I was like, perfect. I had just moved within the city the day before. And so I remember taking a side of a moving box and writing Run Therese Run on it with my little labeling Sharpie. And we went out and we went to Fifth Avenue, which is notoriously probably the toughest part of the marathon course, depending on who you ask and how their day went. But It's that long, gradual climb coming south on Fifth Ave before you go into Central Park. And we stood out there and we cheered for her and we cheered for everyone. And that was my first time seeing the New York City Marathon or seeing any marathon in person. And it was a perfect fall day. And I was like, this is cool. And so I think I didn't necessarily say that day, I want to run a marathon or I want to do this, but I was very aware that it was something cool and special. And I did feel that New York City embraced the marathon. And I still believe that. I know there are people who say that it's annoying, blah, blah, blah. I just don't listen to those people. Mm-hmm. They're not my people. Yeah. The way that New York City embraces its marathon, celebrates these runners. Again, I've been to a lot of races and I haven't seen it the way that New York does it anywhere else. And it runs through so many neighborhoods. You're in all five boroughs. People come out for the runners that day. And that was obvious to me before I knew anything else about the marathon that, oh, these people are doing something exceptional. And I don't remember seeing the pros. I remember seeing the everyday runner. And that was the gateway. Well, if Therese from sales can do it, could I maybe do it? And a couple years later, I did. So yeah, since then, I've not missed a New York City marathon. I'm out there every year in some capacity. So it's blocked off on the calendar. And I'm sorry, but if you are getting married that weekend, I'm going to miss your wedding.
Well, as a lot of people know, John and I never can come to the New York City Marathon. Next year is the year, but Halloween is getting precariously close.
Because it was a problem this year.
Well, someone said to me, do you want to run? And then I was like, I don't know, because I'd have to leave the day after Halloween. So that becomes a little challenging, New York. And Halloween in New York is, I don't think it's as family friendly as the New York City Marathon, let me say.
It was tough this year. This year was a condensed version of the New York City Marathon for me and for all of my friends. Normally, I would have gotten to town on Wednesday, but because Halloween was Thursday night, I made the trip down, got my daughter off to school Friday morning and drove down as fast as I could, but I drove down per the speed limit signs.
In your Volvo.
In my Volvo.
In your heat massaging seats.
Oh, my God.
All right. Insane. So you sort of cheated towards the fact that then you ran the New York City Marathon. So what was that experience like for you?
Okay. So I've run New York three times and it's the best. So the first time that I ran was in 2013. 2011 was really my first year fully immersed in running. Was blogging at Alley on the Run. I was doing the 9+1 program to get entry to the following year's marathon. So I was running like every weekend. I was traveling on the weekends to see my runner friends in DC and in other various cities that I met through our blogs. We would travel and stay in each other's apartments having never met before. It really was a lovely time.
Different time.
And like didn't even have smartphones. I don't even think I had an iPhone yet. I had my little like LG chocolate.
And how did you find their places? You had to print
MapQuest, maybe?
Right? You printed it?
I guess.
Terrifying.
Yeah. So it was the dark ages, but we made it work. And primitive as we were. I was supposed to run my first New York City Marathon. I qualified through the 9+1 program, which is where you run 9 races and you volunteer at one. I volunteered in 2011 at the New York City Marathon Expo handing out race bibs. If you can ever do that, do it. It is awesome. You're handing out bibs to excited runners from all around the world. It was an amazing experience. So then I'm gearing up to run the New York City Marathon in 2012. I'm fit. I'm ready. I'm about to crush my PR. And that was the year of Hurricane Sandy. There was no New York City Marathon
crazy.
In 2012.
Yeah, that was crazy.
I have such vivid memories of that weekend for so many reasons, primarily living in New York City during Hurricane Sandy, which was a tough time to be there. And so that bumped my entry to the following year. So I finally, 2 years in the making, got to run my first New York City Marathon in 2013. And because the race had been canceled the year prior, and it was a pretty emotional cancellation for a lot of reasons, 2013 was electric in New York. We were caged animals ready to run. And so many people were in the same situation who had been just waiting to run New York. And so 2013 was amazing. It was the one of the best days of my life. I was actually really sick. I was dealing with a pretty bad Crohn's disease flare. And so I made 3 bathroom stops in the first half of the race. And what I will tell you about that is I negative split the heck out of it. So
there you
that's
go.
The only way I will ever run negative splits is if I make a lot of bathroom stops early on.
Have you ever actually negative? Can you tell me anyone non-professional that negative splits marathons?
Never in my life.
Because Jeff, today, you know, before the race, he's like, well, you know, just start slow and you can negative split. And I'm like, buddy, no, people don't, we don't do that.
No, go out hard, bank time, positive splits for positive people.
You never negative
that's
split
what we're doing.
Doesn't
here.
Happen.
That's the Allie Feller method. I'll trademark it.
It sounds great, Jeff. I know you have a lot of experience, but it doesn't really work.
He's also elite. You can't listen to those elite people. They're not
No. It's
They're
a different
not
strategy.
Like you and I, peeps.
Olympians.
No. Yeah, no, we need to just be realistic. It was incredible, though. I remember people really hype up First Avenue in Manhattan, which is when you come off the Queensboro Bridge. So it's around mile 16. And I will forever be Team Brooklyn. And I'm a Manhattan girl. I always lived in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. I love Manhattan. It's where I stay when I visit. Brooklyn is the party.
Okay.
All 5 boroughs have something special to offer. But Brooklyn, you feel like you're in the Tour de France. You are running down these just crowds of people. People are hanging out their balconies. It's everything that you see and hear about. And you're the center of it. You're who they're cheering for. And it's so surreal. And so, yeah, I loved it. I actually, after 2013, I said I would never run New York again. I had, even with the bathroom stops, I had such a perfect experience. I was so afraid of doing it again and ruining that perfect memory of New York. I am here to report back. Run New York as much as you can, because it's always amazing. So I ran it again in 2014, which was the windy year. Mm-hmm. People listening may have run in 2014.
Yes.
They know I had like my throwaway hat and I was holding it on running across the Verrazano. People's stuff was blowing off. People were tripping. It was so windy. So that was 2014. And then I did it my third and probably final time since I work it now in 2016 and ran the whole thing with a friend. And so I've had, New York has never been about a time race for me. It has never been trying to do anything special. It has always been about being a part of the New York City Marathon. And so I'm all for racing New York however you want, but I am forever a very big proponent of racing New York for the experience of the fact that you're at the New York City Marathon.
Well, you took one of my questions about the borough.
Sorry.
That was it's all good. I love the organic nature of this. And I just wanted to slip in there. I'm old enough to remember when you could afford to live in Brooklyn. That's how old I am.
Oh, you can't do that anymore.
No.
Well, you're really far out. You're past IKEA.
You are. It's all chasing the affordable neighborhood in New York is a challenge always. All right.
Yeah.
So for people not familiar with it, who may be familiar with New York, not familiar with the marathon, take us from the start to the finish and in as succinct a way as you possibly can, where you go. And while you're going through that, you've already talked about Fifth Avenue being challenging. Talk about the challenging places. And then outside of the entire borough of Brooklyn, represent, former Dodgers. What are some of the highlight areas just as somebody soaking in the color of the New York City Marathon?
Okay, I'm so happy right now.
I feel
this
like
is all I ever want to talk about.
I feel like you're the dot when they go to race coverage and they're like, and then you go this way and you'll make that.
Yeah.
Like, you get to be the dot, Allie.
And I'm not that person. That's we defer to Carrie Tolleson and John Anderson
you,
for that part.
Who have both been on the podcast. I'll do them.
Put me in, coach.
Okay.
Okay. So the race starts well before the race starts, because first you have to get to Staten Island, which, as it sounds, is an island. And in order to get 50,000 people there, a lot of logistics have to happen. So several options to get you out to the Athlete Village. You can take the Staten Island Ferry. I always say if it's your first time running the New York City Marathon, take the ferry. Ferry's great because it has bathrooms. It's warm. You're going to go right past the Statue of Liberty. You will get, thanks to daylight saving time, you will get a gorgeous sunrise, weather permitting. And the camaraderie and community on the ferry is awesome. Even if you take the ferry, you're then taking a shuttle to the start. So it's more than 90 minutes to get there from Midtown Manhattan. You can take the buses. You can have people drop you off in Staten Island. You cannot park a car there. So first you have to get there. Then once you're there in Staten Island, you're at the Athlete Village, which is massive. 50,000 runners taking over Fort Wadsworth. It's very cool. The Verrazano Narrows Bridge is looming in the distance. And that is where this race starts. Miles 1 and 2 are up and over the bridge. The steepest climb on the course is mile one. That is when you are running right to the peak of that bridge. You're not going to feel it. The pros might, because they're running, you know, sub five, but for most people, you will not notice that you are running straight uphill mile one because you're taking in the sights. You see Manhattan in the distance. You see Brooklyn in the distance. It's the most incredible. And of course, when they start, they're playing New York, New York, Frank Sinatra. The start of every wave gets a cannon and gets Frank Sinatra. So that's very cool. And usually they have the fireboats down in the water doing all kinds of water shows. And it's just, there's so much to take in. So you're running straight uphill mile one. Mile two, you're running straight downhill. Don't make this your fastest mile of the day. Remember, it is mile two. You can pull in Allie Feller and talk about how, oh my gosh, I'm running 7:30s and it's only mile two, but I feel great. I can hold this pace. No, you can't. Slow down. The first bathroom stop will be around the 5K mark. No bathrooms on the bridges. So just something to keep in mind.
But the men still pee off the bridge, don't they? They do.
Yeah.
They do.
They do. They do.
Chris Chavez told us that.
They do.
Yeah. I know. Not fair. It's okay. It's not fair.
I mean, go for it. No, I shouldn't say that.
It's not fair. All right. Yeah.
Note to Maritime, folks. Don't anchor your boat underneath the bridge at the start of the race. That's all we're saying, folks.
Yeah. Well, there's also runners on both levels. It is a two-tier bridge. So people always ask for people who are on the lower level, which I believe is now the pink wave. People don't want to be on the lower level. And they're like, I'm going to get peed on. You're probably not going to get peed on. Also, the lower level is great because it blocks the wind. So don't get mad if you're on the lower level.
You're not really selling it well, Allie, with you probably won't get peed on is really not a way to sell. You probably won't. Look.
How much more can I say about the camaraderie? If someone's peeing on you, it's because they have to. Why don't you say, you know what? Good for them. They emptied their bladder. I hope they have a great race.
Only acceptable if you've been bitten by a jellyfish for someone to pee on you. That's a situation like that.
Runners are weird. Yeah. And we're a little bit gross. And it's fine. So once you get to up and over the bridge, you are now in Brooklyn, which is where you will spend. You spend the longest amount of time, I believe, in Brooklyn. So you're in Brooklyn until, I want to say, mile 13 or 14. Brooklyn is so, so, so fun. For the majority of your time in Brooklyn, you are running through absolutely packed streets with so many people out cheering. You're running past the Barclays Center. Sports teams play there. I can name one. The New York Liberty plays at the Barclays
Brooklyn
Center.
Nets. The Brooklyn Nets.
Brooklyn Nets. That's the easy one. I want to say Jay-Z owns it.
I think he owns practically everything.
He's involved.
Yeah, he's involved.
Yeah, absolutely. Not a big sports girl here. But I can tell you that the crowds around the Barclays are incredible. So it's just going to be deafeningly loud. People always ask if they should listen to music during New York. I always say, like, have it with you in case you want it, but take it in. So Brooklyn is sort of rolling hills. You might feel some of them. There's no big dramatic climbs, but there are some rollers that keep things spicy throughout Brooklyn. Eventually, you will make your way over, I want to say it's the Willis Ave Bridge, which is the halfway mark. I think that hill's hard and no one talks about it, but you're at the halfway point and it's a hill and it looks like a hill and you still have a ways to go.
Can I just say that having run a marathon yesterday, the halfway point is not exciting to get to.
Not even a little bit.
Like, it's like, that's still very, very far. Like,
I feel the same way about mile 16, which is when you realize you have 10 miles.
Yeah, no, that's, yeah, all
16
of them.
Feels like you 20. Should be so far.
I have a 10K.
Yeah, it's all awesome.
But, like, basically. The halfway point, I try to ignore all that.
Anticlimactic.
It's like,
completely.
Cool. I'll be here for a few more hours.
Exactly.
All right, but we're there. We're happy. We're checking blocks.
Yes, and then you're in Queens. And, you know, I haven't run the race since 2016, but I do remember each time being like, Queens is pretty awesome. Like, people come out in Queens, and I like that. You're not in Queens for very long. You make some turns. At some point, you are able to see Silver Cup Studios, which is where they film all kinds of things. I think, like, that was the set for, I don't know, Friends, 30 Rock, a lot of shows film at Silver Cup Studios in Queens. And then you are up and over the Verrazano. I'm sorry. Then you are up and over the Queensboro Bridge. Everyone talks about the Queensboro. At this point, you're at mile 15 of the race. You're starting to get tired and you have this massive bridge and it just went from being so loud to being so quiet. So a lot of people are starting to walk at this point, which I think can be demoralizing, sounds dramatic, but when you're feeling okay and you see people walking, I think you have that moment of, should I stop and walk? Do I need to walk? Should I walk now? Can I get to that point? And so it's more the mind games that start to kick in. this is also the point where you just hear people breathing, you hear feet shuffling. I think it's a nice time to sort of reset, regroup, know that you're more than halfway and you're heading into Manhattan, which is really fun. So you're going up the Queensboro Bridge, then you get to come down the Queensboro Bridge, you get to the ramp at the bottom and you do a quick sort of switch back. And then it spits you out on First Avenue. First Avenue is a very wide street that runs north to south. And so you are now just running north in Manhattan. The crowds are 5-6 people deep on the side. They're cheering for you. They're having fun. Again, I'm going to say I'm Brooklyn over Manhattan. Here's what I think is the difference. Brooklyn cheers for everyone. Manhattan cheers for their person.
Okay.
First Avenue is a lot of people waiting to see their runner. Whereas Brooklyn will cheer for every single person that exists. And I think that's the key difference. So
that's
my challenge to First Ave, cheer for everyone. So it's awesome. It is, again, sneaky hills, a bit rolling coming up First Ave, and you're on it for a long time. You're on First Ave for a few miles. That eventually turns into the Bronx. You're in the Bronx for like 8 seconds, but what the Bronx does include is the wall. Mile 20 is in the Bronx. And fortunately, the Bronx shows up for mile 20 and they're out there cheering and giving you a lot of love. And then you're making a bunch of turns. You'll eventually make your way back into Manhattan. You'll come through Harlem, which I think is one of the absolute best parts on the course. I remember there being this huge, really fun drum line in Harlem, and I love a drum line. So that got me really pumped. Very, very, very much a neighborhood and community feel when you're coming through Harlem, and you feel it. And then you're on Fifth Ave. So Fifth Ave, you are running uphill, running south on Fifth Avenue all the way until you get to the entrance to Central Park, which is one of my other favorite parts of the course. So Fifth Ave is just a grind. It's not a steep hill. It doesn't even look like a hill, but it feels like one.
Well, anything at that point is a grind.
Exactly. You're at mile 22. It feels like a hill. Yeah. Again, I'll give love to the crowds. They come out. They're going to make you feel love. They're going to tell you you look great, even though you look the worst you've ever looked.
Are they going to tell you you're almost there? Because that makes me irately angry.
I sure hope not. But do you use this as an announcer? Do you ever say at the finish, you're like, I'm the only person who gets to tell you that you're almost there. Everyone else lied to you.
John has another thing he likes to say.
I like to do this thing when it gets a little bit later and they're spread out a bit, welcoming them to the halfway point. Just to see the look on the couple of people's faces who for just that split second go, kidding. And then I blame it on someone
else. Yes, I do say that. And I say, like, if anybody else ever tells you this, that's not right here, they're lying.
They lied to you.
Even if they were right there. It's the worst
thing. No, that's our job.
Yeah.
And we have that privilege. So you make a right-hand turn. It's called Engineer's Gate. It's very special to me because it is where I entered the park every single day as a runner in New York City. And so it's just one of my favorite spots. There's a huge sign that I'm dying to own that says, "Welcome to Central Park." I love that sign. And then you're in the park. The crowds are a little – there's not a ton of crowds in Central Park because it's harder to get in and out of the park. So – a little bit quieter, but it's beautiful. It's peak fall. There's so much to see. You're going to run down Cat Hill, which is nice, though at that point, nothing feels great for your legs. And then you leave. So here's what's a little messed up that New York does is you're coming down Cat Hill, and to your right, you can see the finish line across Central Park. But first, they're going to spit you out onto Central Park South. They're going to make you run the entire length of Central Park South, which feels like the cruelest uphill of all time.
Yeah.
You cut back into the park at Columbus Circle, which is fun. They have a stage there. They have announcers. They have a DJ. They make it really fun. And then you're in your last 400 meters. It's an uphill finish. It doesn't matter because you can see it. You can feel the energy. The grandstands are packed. And then you're finishing the New York City Marathon at Tavern on the Green. And this is why I can't have the job that John and Carrie have, because I can't do this in 90 seconds. I need like 14 minutes.
But you did an amazing job. And we interrupted you. We're interrupters. You did it. That was very, and we didn't prep you for that. You just know it by heart, which I love. And that's the great thing about running too. When you run, you internalize, like, I can't tell you like what I wore 3 days ago, or like, I do know what day it is because it's Christmas. I'm good at that December. But like when you run a race, like those pictures in your mind are so clear of like this moment and this was this. And when you're talking about going over the bridge and being quiet, I bet in your head you can see someone that was like in front of you in one of the times you ran.
Oh, I can feel it. I can feel the bridge.
Yeah.
And when you're on the Verrazano, you feel it bouncing. And you look ahead and it's just a sea of bouncing runner heads. Like, I can feel that in my bones right now. And yeah. Again, that goes back to the shared experience. We can describe this to other people who would have tuned out 20 minutes ago with describing all of this stuff. But runners listening, especially ones who've run this race, like, they're feeling this in their bones right now because they had that shared experience. And I live for that.
No, that was a fantastic. I mean, now, I wasn't going to ever do a marathon again. And now I'm like, well, I guess
well,
I could
you
just,
are.
It's fine.
No, and I'm glad you took the time to throw in those, you know, because listen, and John Anderson, I interviewed him on our podcast a number of times. One of the sweetest guys in the world. Such a good guy to deal with. I love Carrie as well. And but on the television, you know, they have 90 seconds to your point to walk you through it. You took us through it and gave us those sort of insights about, you know, you're not in the Bronx for long. And as a Yankee hater, that I'm fine with that. We could avoid it all together. I'd be just great with that. Long-suffering Orioles fan, as is John Anderson, by the way. I don't think John Anderson, long-suffering Brewers fan, really would care about the Yankees as well. But to go through it that way from a runner's just frame of mind while you're running, like, yeah, you're in Central Park and that's a lot of fun for a while, but then you double back at Central Park and now you're going, you know, those are the sort of things that I find interesting, let alone the fact that you're dealing with, as I talked about off the air, all of the borough governments that you're dealing with, state police, municipal police, maritime police down there trying to point out people urinating off the bridge, apparently. Mm-hmm. All of those sort of things that they have to deal with, it's just a glorious celebration of what people can do if they really put their mind to it.
I have an important question. You may not know this answer. Now you're going to be like, what?
Oh, no.
I'm not trying to test. When you finish, what type of snacks are available immediately upon finishing? Do you know this answer?
Nothing is immediate upon finishing in New York. You have to do the death march. You have to do a bit of a shuffle. So there are 3 different exits to get you out of Central Park.
But do you get a medal? Like, when is the medal? When's the Mylar? When's the food? All right, take us to the end.
Yeah, so you cross the finish line.
Whee!
You have about 1 second to take a selfie or beg someone to take your picture before the staff and volunteers are whisking you out. And the runners get a little annoyed. They're like, I need a minute. You get a backlog of 50,000 runners and people can't cross the finish line. It is so quick. Mm-hmm. How that can happen. And we see it. Like, one person stops for too long and the bottleneck that creates, it's wild to watch. And then there's people puking and crying and there's just so many bodily fluids. And then there's proposals. It's honestly beautiful. So you cross the finish line and you're going to shuffle a little bit. And I'm trying to think of what you get first. I think you're going to get your medal first. And that's like the most coveted volunteer job, is getting to do medals. That's like a hard job to get. Then soon thereafter, you will get an entire bag. It's like a string bag, a clear string bag that is filled with your snacks that include, I believe it's a bag of Snyder's pretzels,
a
New York apple. It's a Macintosh apple from New York State.
Yeah.
This year, I don't want to say sponsors and get them wrong. I know SIS was one of the partners. I know it is Poland Spring Water. We were back to Poland Spring this year.
Thank God it's not Dasani. I wasn't going to run.
No. Oh God. What do you want to be sick after?
I know. I think every Dasani. Podcast we diss Dasani.
Poland Springs are bust. Yes. I believe we were back to Poland Spring.
Good.
Gatorade.
Gatorade.
Yeah,
good to know.
You're getting all of that in your bag soon.
Do we know
after.
Color of Gatorade?
I don't.
Okay.
I don't know the color, unfortunately. Okay. Shoot. I feel like I'm failing.
No, you're not failing. You're not failing. You're doing
it.
Amazing.
We're wrapping it up now.
You're doing amazing.
Thank you for
but
joining
there
us.
Are headline, so, Allie Feller doesn't know what color of Gatorade.
Allie Feller doesn't know crap about New York City Marathon, except where the porta potties are. And that is important. So a big thing, though, is in the weeks and months leading up to New York, you have to make all these big decisions. And one of them is, are you checking a bag or do you want early exit from the park? I am team early exit. So you can either check a bag, at which point you have to like walk the mile out of Central Park to go get your bag. Mm-hmm. Or if you're early exit, you get to leave the park sooner and you are given the most amazing fleece poncho. We're not doing Mylar blankets here.
Fleece poncho.
Fleece poncho.
Yep, I have one. Well, I have one. Weston has one. I remember now.
Those ponchos are awesome. And so, yeah, I love an early exit. I love the poncho. It comes in handy. And then you're in that sea of runners walking with your poncho. And it's just kind of a cool sight. So, yeah. Or if you are VIP, you get to leave immediately.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you do that once and you can never go back. So
I know. The bus, the VIP bus.
I will tell you, of all the people we've ever interviewed who've done it, no one has been team check your bag. No one has ever been team check. Everybody essentially says the same thing for the same reason. Because at that point, it's like what you're now, that will be the worst part of your day. It's the, just trying to get through all of that.
And, you know, we have so many ways of doing things now. Like, what do you need from your bag? A change of clothes? Well, here's your poncho. And also, you probably just ran with your phone. And I know that because I saw every single runner videoing themselves crossing the finish line. And so you have what you need. Take the poncho.
Yeah.
Take the poncho.
All right. So you don't get a poncho if you gear check?
Okay. I thought that was the case.
You have to. That would be not fair.
But again, I haven't done, since 2016.
Do VIPs get the poncho?
Not sure.
VIPs get a poncho.
Well, that's it. I can go next year. I'm flying up there and I'm going to videotape what happens. I'm going to follow the bag check people. So let's sell this to the network. And I have some on-camera experience, and this can be all cleared up with post-production. I want to be the person who follows the bag check people in real time, what you have to go through. And if they don't get the poncho, I mean, this could be a story that could continue on for years. So speak to somebody's people and then get back to me.
Okay. I love this plan.
Well, Ali, that was a wonderful recap. We appreciate that. I'm excited. I'm energized. It's not even, you know, mid-December.
It's 11 months away.
We're ready. We're excited about it. Any fun facts or any little nuggets that you haven't told us that you want to get out before we move on to the next part of your New York City marathon journey?
Okay. Fun facts about New York. Oh my gosh.
Not the city. It's a large city, storied history.
I mean, it is always fun to see who the Grand Marshal is in New York. This year it was Gabby Thomas, and she got to lead the race in an old school taxi and was hanging out the windows waving to everyone. One of my favorite parts, so there have been years where I'm at the start line and the finish line. This year I was just at the finish. And I think one thing that people would be shocked about, and I don't have a number, it's the number of people at the finish line. And this is true in Boston. This is true in New York. Chicago's a little more chill. But at the New York City Marathon finish line, there are hundreds of people on the ground waiting, working, volunteering. There's medical. There's the New York Roadrunners staff and volunteers. There's the city partners. There is the people working the broadcast. There's the people announcing. Like, there are so many people just waiting for these runners to come right at the finish. So I always think that that's kind of a cool, impressive thing. Also really good people watching at the New York City Marathon finish line. They have this very fancy pavilion that is on the finish line. And that's where the VIPs are. The first time I ever saw Eliud Kipchoge was there. This year, Alon Amar, the rugby player, and Dancing with the Stars sensation. Yeah. She was in there. So it's a mix of professional athletes. Joan Benoit Samuelson's always in there. Dina Kaster's always in there. Meb Keflezighi's always in there. So we have the legends of the sport. We have the current big names in the sport who aren't running New York. Like this year, Emily Sisson was hanging out in there. And then that's where the celebrities are. So this year, that's where Hillary Clinton was. And so that's where all the notables. I know you don't like the Yankees, but that's where Aaron Judge was in years past.
Avoid at all costs.
And always a lot of people from The Bachelor. A lot of tangential Bachelor people who I don't know who they are, but they look famous because they're beautiful. So yeah. So, I mean, the people watching at the New York City Marathon finish line comes to mind because you never know who you are going to see. And oftentimes, I mean, the Clintons come to mind because they've been there the past few years and no one knows they're going to be there because you can't know they're there because Secret Service doesn't put out press releases. And so, yeah, it's very fun. Finish line people watching.
I love that. Okay, so you transitioned to the announcing team. We've already been talking for a long time, so I don't want to dive too much into it, but like, what was that first year like when you were like, oh my God, I'm working at the New York City Marathon?
So I have a video that I am so glad that I just filmed myself in this moment. So the first year I announced was 2019 at the New York City Marathon finish line. I had worked some New York Roadrunners races leading up to it, and this was, of course, pre-pandemic. And I was living in New Jersey, so I commuted across the river to get to the marathon. And I you know, I had announced plenty of races by that point, but never a major, and never, certainly never the New York City Marathon. And I was walking up to where I needed to be at the finish, and I was blocks away, like city blocks away, and I could hear the announcers. And I filmed myself and was like, I'm never nervous to announce, but I am so nervous right now. And you can just like feel that energy in this little video that I made. And I did. I was like, oh my gosh, everyone hears the announcers. Like as a race announcer, I'm just like, oh, I'm just here for hype and fun. And most people don't listen. But in New York, I was standing right near the building Madonna lives in. And I was like, Madonna can hear the race announcers right now. So yeah, I was super nervous. Once I was doing it, I wasn't. New York is also, and you know, like whatever races you work with a different team most of the time and a lot of repeat people, which is really fun. And the love that I have for the New York City Marathon announcers is a very special kind of love. I was the new kid and they welcomed me and answered my questions and helped. And so to Carla Bruning and to Dave and Joey and that whole team that works the marathon finish line specifically, and they've all been doing it for decades. Mm-hmm. Like the fact that I was brand new in New York and they were so nice, I think that really, it put me at ease. I also worked the finish line after dark that year. So my shift started at 1 p.m. and went through the night, which was really cool. And that's where, you know, they bring the announcers down on the ground. We're high-fiving people. It's a dance party. And it's amazing to see how that has evolved. The finish line after dark is now its own event, which is really, really amazing and heartwarming to see. So yeah, the first year I was nervous before. And then it's just talking. I wasn't doing the beginning of the race. I was doing the afternoon shift. So I was doing my people, right? Like mm-hmm. I was talking to the Alley on the Run show listener. The following, well, not 2020, there wasn't one, but 2021, they brought me in and I was announcing at the finish from the beginning. So that was a little bit more of logistics and talking to the people in the stands about what's happening in the race and getting splits and then announcing the winner finishes. And the team in New York is amazing. They have no ego. No one's like, I need to announce the lead men. Like everyone's like, oh, do you want to do it? Go for it. Like that year I was like, is it okay if I announce Kira's finish? Or maybe that was 2022 because Kira D'Amato and I had become close friends by then and she was running. And I just asked and they were like, yeah, of course, go for it. Like no one's territorial. Everyone's really great to work with. And so, yeah, I think I always get a little nervous because it's New York, but it just comes from wanting to do a good job and getting to be a part of a really incredible team. And you just want to be, you don't want to be the weak link on that team.
Well, all right. Before
if you work with John, you don't have to worry about that. There's always a weak link. It's John.
Well, so true. I'm no Matt Pablo. I'm telling you, folks, I'm no Matt Pablo. We're going to jump forward to 2024 because you had a really big 2024 and a lot of really, really cool stuff that got to happen. But for my quick follow-up on this, as a race announcer, what interests me is pre-race. What is a pre-race like for a New York race announcer? You know, at Disney, and people told us, heard us say this, and when we get some information ahead of time via email, if there have been some changes in sponsors or we're going to mix something up and add something new, and then we meet the day before and we go through our outline. We don't really have a script. We have more of an outline of things that we need to hit on, and I'm air quoting for everyone listening, and the clock of when we're supposed to do it, which always ends up going out the door, minute one. But what is that like for New York? When do you start that communication process and garnering that information that most of which you probably don't use, like us, mm-hmm. but that stuff you want to have in your holster, for lack of a better term, to use if you need to?
Yeah, they'll send us the script. They'll have a binder for us. We won't touch it. We'll just go off the cuff. Early on, we'll make sure we get those sponsor reads in so that we can check them off. But once the race starts, it's all hype the whole time. So yeah, I would say those conversations are late, like last week of October, and the race is the first weekend of November. So there's not, again, because the team in New York is pretty much the same every year, maybe with a few new faces or a little bit of changing in the shifts, everyone kind of knows what they're doing. There's not a ton needed for the New York City Marathon team. We don't do... And I didn't announce in New York this year. Mm-hmm. I was just doing the broadcast this year at the finish. So in my experience, we never did rehearsals. We have our stage managers, Shannon and other people on the team who keep everyone in line and check in and make sure you have what you need. But it's pretty much just, okay, go. Not a ton of prep needed. I think a start line requires more prep than a finish line. Start line, not that it matters more, but like start line, especially at a major, you're working with the broadcast, you're working with a lot of moving parts, you've got flyovers happening, and you have to time your announcements just right, and you're introducing guest speakers, and at the finish, you're just excited. And so, yeah, those conversations usually happen, I think, a lot later than people would expect. And in my experience, no rehearsals or run-throughs.
All right.
A lot of trust, I guess.
All right, Allie, we've used up a lot of your time, and I don't want to keep talking because I don't know where you need to get to.
Well, it's because I talk too
much. Okay, no, we have a few more questions, so you let us know if we need to shut up. But this year was, I mean, I'm going to say a massive year for you in New York City. Not only was it a shift for your role at the race, but you did a show with Gabby at Carnegie Hall. You did a show with Kiera for Volvo. You interviewed two Clintons, I believe. So if you had to pick two highlights from this year, I know. I'm giving you two. I mean, you can, you don't have to. It's not, all your fans probably heard your recap episode. They probably know, but like if you had to really like hone in on two things from this year that are going to stick with you for a while and for whatever reason, what would that be?
Oh, okay. The snapshot moments. It's got to be the Carnegie Hall show. So I did a live show at Carnegie Hall, sponsored by New Balance, guest Gabby Thomas. It was incredible. And New Balance did so much to make that super special for me. Last year, New York City Marathon, I was in the middle of chemotherapy and I was a shell of a human and I had a lot going on personally and it just was not a good time to be Allie Feller. This year in New York felt like just such a celebration. And so the Carnegie Hall show was absolutely incredible. Okay. The Volvo show with Kiera was awesome. And the only reason I'm not going to put that as my next one.
You just had to say that so Kiera was like, wait, you didn't say me?
Well, Kiera and Volvo. Like, Volvo getting to do a show in the Volvo studio, like, was so awesome. But this was my first year as a full-fledged member of the domestic broadcast. Last year, I worked the World Feed, which is really, really cool. And the World Feed does an awesome job. And the World Feed is actually in more homes.
But nobody in America sees you.
But my parents couldn't find it.
Well, they just had to get a VPN. I know, it's difficult.
Okay, you go teach David Feller about VPNs. And teach him while you're at it, because I don't know. But this year,
it's really easy, by the way. I had to do it to watch Netflix in Canada.
I believe you. I got to hold an ESPN microphone at the TCS New York City Marathon finish line, interviewing Ilona Marr, interviewing Sarah Vaughn and Connor Mance and Clayton Young and Chelsea Clinton. And I felt like the entire day at the finish, I had so many moments of this is exactly what I'm supposed to be doing. Like, this is where I'm supposed to be. And this is what it was all for. And just really feeling in my heart and my gut and my soul, this is so much more than what I ever dreamed possible and ever wanted. And another little moment I was really proud of was the first time they came to me on the broadcast. They were like, it's just going to be a 90-second hit, just you at the finish, and it's going to be when wave one is starting. And that was all the direction I was given. And I don't like that. I will interview people all day. But to just cut to me by myself and I have to fill time and space, I want to add value. I don't want to ramble. I don't want to be too cheesy, but I don't want to. I just was so stressed about this. And so I was like, well, what's interesting? And I came up with some facts and figures about the start line and sent them to my producer. And he was like, yeah, this is great. And I was the most nervous for that than anything else. And it went okay. I was a little awkward when it started, but I pulled off my 90-second hit. And as soon as it wrapped, the director and producer were like, that was great, Allie. And so I was like, all right, we're rolling. We're in it. And the rest of the day from there just felt like a fun celebration. So yeah, so the whole thing is my top two moments. Did I do a good job answering your question?
You did. You did a great job. And I'm very proud of you. And I listened to your podcast and I know that you went to Let's Run and you let nasty people. I mean, I just don't know why we do that. Like, it's just people. Why do people?
Shut up, Allie. No one cares.
Like, I was like, why did you say so that?
Mean. I just wanted to tell you about how many therapy dogs were at the start. And by the way, there's more than 20.
And you know, that's like, there's like, and that's my, I would be like, there's people that one love dogs. And two, like, isn't that amazing that many people that have therapy dogs have the courage to go out and run 26.2 miles where you are sitting at home on your computer. And I'm inspiring somebody else who says, I thought I couldn't do that because I need a therapy dog. And now they can go do it, whatever your name was on Let's Run. So there you go. Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. Boom.
The last time I looked up something, I can't do it. Like, I learned from when I did pageants, that was really bad. But years ago, I looked up something because this woman had told me that someone, remember the woman, John, that said, like, she saw me in her hotel, that we were staying at the same hotel at Disney and it ruined her weekend?
Yeah. So aggressive.
Same hotel. But this person went on and on about how.
Wait, just your existence.
The fact that I was taking a picture in front of the Christmas tree with my child, and the fact that she saw me ruined her whole weekend. But this person.
She also hates your kids.
I know. This person was going on and on because I wouldn't accept their Facebook friend request.
Oh, I haven't looked at my Facebook friend requests in 8 years.
Anyway, but it's funny the thing. And then you remember it.
We have to have at least 10 mutual friends. I'm just telling anybody listening right now, we need at least 10 mutual friends. I won't do the 2 mutual friends because they probably accepted the wrong thing too. 10 mutual friends, I will take you on Facebook.
I'm like, I have to like have like meaningful interactions with a person. Not that it's not meaningful to anybody listening. I'm getting myself in a hole.
But you need to know them.
Like I actually know, like, would I give you my phone number? Like, or do I have your phone? Do you know what I mean?
Facebook is friends, not followers.
And Facebook is where I post the pictures that you don't need to see, but my family, my great uncle, like, he likes them and I want them to see these
things. I'm going to add you as my Facebook friend as soon as we hang up.
Yes.
Actually, I'm going to create fake profiles.
I don't know.
I'm creating fake profiles in both of you. I'm just going to pepper you.
John Peachy, what happens?
With friend requests.
Just you. But anyway.
All right. I want to jump into you brought up a little bit. Take the Ferry is the big takeaway for people. But we'll have a lot of Disney runners who are going to be running their first New York City Marathon in 2025. We always have a lot of people can't be at Wine and Dine because I'm doing New York for the first time. Not offended. How cool for you. What are some of the other tips for first timers? And even Allie, as a former Manhattan resident and somebody who loves New York as much as I do, even some New York tips for people who are coming into town to run their first race, some do's and don'ts for them.
Book your hotel and book your dinner reservations for the day before the race. Don't leave it to chance. There are probably hundreds of Italian restaurants in Midtown. They're overrun by runners. Just make a reservation. And don't overcomplicate it. Google it. Go on Yelp. Go on TripAdvisor. Don't DM me and ask me where you should get dinner the night before the race because I don't know. I say just search Yelp within a half mile radius and go there. Don't overcomplicate it. Everyone's going to say stay off your feet, but it's New York. There's so much to see and do. I would say just stay true to what feels good for you. These major marathon weekends have gotten so big and so overwhelming. And as a result, and I am fully aware that I am part of the problem. I think there's a lot of FOMO to be had because you can't be at every shakeout and every podcast and every live show and every event. And so do what feels most important to you. Have a buddy if you can. I think it always helps to have someone, whether they're there with you in person or just that you can FaceTime when you're in your hotel at the end of the day to check in. Take it all in. I'm a big fan of not running New York for time. I'm not going to convince anyone one way or the other. I know that if you have big goals and PR dreams, you're going to go for it. And I fully support that. New York is a hard course. And I do think you can run a personal best on this course. Manage your expectations. Familiarize yourself with the logistics as best you can. Ask questions. Just enjoy it. It really is amazing. The city comes out to celebrate the runners in a way that I've never seen anywhere else. And it's a really special and magical day in that way. And I'll give you a high five at the finish. And I can't wait to see you.
Nice. I have one more question. Where would you tell people to stay? Because it's a big island.
Yeah, I always say Midtown. Midtown is going to make it easy enough for you to get to the start. If you take the buses, they leave from Midtown. If you take the ferry, it is an easy subway ride, cab or Uber down to the Staten Island Ferry. And then you are relatively close to the finish. If you want to be as close as possible to the finish, you're going to stay on the Upper West Side. So Upper West Side, Midtown, Midtown West, Hell's Kitchen, those are all pretty safe bets. They're probably the most popular answers. If you want to stay somewhere like cool and trendy, I'm not the person to ask, but find yourself a Westin, a Sheraton, a Hilton Garden Inn.
Hey, Residence Inn by the Park is nice. Yeah. I stayed there when I got
again,
stuck
again, don't
there.
Overcomplicate you, it. Like, just book a hotel
if you
with
want
a
something affordable. If you want something affordable, folks, New Haven is always a good
New
choice.
Hampshire, for exactly.
Yes, New
but
Hampshire.
Also, it is
Southern Connecticut.
Yeah, yeah. So, yeah, I mean, I think people can get really overwhelmed with the logistics of New York, and I understand that. Mm-hmm. And if 55,000 runners can do it, so can you.
All right. We thank you for all your generous time. I have more questions, but we would be here all day, which would be lovely, but we've got things to do.
Forever.
So we have our traditional closing questions that we are going to ask you. Are you ready?
Yes.
Okay, Johnny.
All right. Allie Feller, when you get to a hard place in a workout, a run, even some preparing for an announcing gig, wherever, when you find yourself, when you hit that wall, we all hit at some point. What do you do to motivate yourself?
I'm going to have to go with a Taylor Swift quote here, and it's going to be, "Who's afraid of little old me?" You didn't come this far just to come this far. You didn't put in all of the work to give up now. You're going to get to the finish. It might not be pretty. It might not be how you pictured it, but you will get there. Or, you know, I can quote Taylor. Maybe I quote my therapist, Martha, and I say, put on your big girl pants and handle it.
Oh, Martha, sassy. We like Martha.
Honestly, Martha is so mean, and I'm obsessed with her.
It's amazing.
You switch up my therapist. All right. I like Martha.
She's so mean.
My finishing song yesterday was Who's Afraid of Little Me. And then I crossed the finish line because I don't start the music right away. I wait till like I need it. And then I finished and the 10-minute All Too Well came on and I was actually really mad. I was like, why now? I wanted this. It's like, what? Oh, man. Oh.
All Too Well 10-minute only comes on when I need it.
I mean, I wanted it.
It's like
a
weird, like, I can't explain it. I don't plan this way, but like, I was recently out for a run and I had 1 mile left. And no matter my pace, I'm always like, 1 mile is 10 minutes.
Right? Exactly. In your head. So good.
How does she do that?
So good. This is going to be a hard one for you. I know. It is a hard one for everyone. Most inspiring moment you have seen or heard at a race?
Oh my God. At any race.
But what picture just popped in your head?
I don't know why, but it was Connor and Clayton high-fiving each other at the Olympics. And the camera happened to catch that. I don't know that I would pick that as my most inspiring moment. I mean, certainly Meb Keflezighi winning Boston 2014 and Dez winning Boston 2018 and Shalane winning New York 2017. Like, those are all up there for me. But I don't know. There is something I love about those Utah boys and training partners and best friends high-fiving each other of like, hey, we worked our butts off. We made it here. And now we are running the Olympics together. And they just did that little high five. They didn't know that a camera was on them. That was just a genuine like brotherhood moment. And yeah, I don't know if I would pick that, but that was the moment that popped into my head right away.
It's joy, but it's joy. So. Oh. Through pain.
Warm fuzzies, baby.
They are cute.
That's the great thing. The joy from that level all the way to that final finisher in New York where you're burst out into tears because, you know, that journey might have been equally as and probably was even more all-encompassing. And it's probably almost even a bigger victory for them. All right, Allie, listen, I know you're a shrinking violet and you really don't you don't get out there much and you don't want people bugging you. But if people do want to keep up with you and your rapidly increasing career in the running industry, which is just so much fun to watch, other than your podcast, and you can certainly prep that, give that a little love as well. Where can people follow you if they want to know where you're going to be next and what, just anything about Allie.
Yeah. Well, first, it's never bothering me. I love meeting people. The only reason I have the job I have is because people are along for the ride. And so I'm just forever grateful and I love meeting everyone. So I am the Allie on the Run Show podcast, wherever you listen to podcasts, Apple Podcasts, iTunes, Spotify, on Instagram. I am Allie on the Run 1. And those are the two places I am most consistent and most available. There's also the Alley on the Run Show Best Running Friends Facebook page, which is a very wholesome and loving corner of the internet that I would highly recommend joining. So that's where I am.
And what's next for you? Where can we next see you? Not on the run, out on the run, on the mic. Where will you
be? I'm done for 2024. I am, New York was the last big one. And so for the rest of this year, I have no races that I am either working or running. I just need to chill for a little bit. And I'm in the process now of having all of my 2025 conversations. I'll be at the big ones. I will be at Boston. I will be in Chicago. I will be in New York. All the usual places, and having some very fun conversations that I can't tell you about yet about where I will be in 2025, including two new to me events in two new to me, one brand new to me place and another place I've been a lot, but I've never been to the race that is there. So there's my vague non-answer for you.
Yeah, well, we will be following along. Thank you for all of your New York City tips. And maybe John and I will work our way into the city to be able to experience it.
I'll need to sleep on someone's couch. So anyone listening in Midtown or, oh, heck, Harlem, anywhere, even the Bronx, as long as I can't see Yankee Stadium, I'll be perfectly happy.
Find a place for you.
Awesome. Thank you, Allie, so much for the time. It was a pleasure. Now get out of here and go enjoy.
Thank you so much for having me. You two are awesome. And thank you for all that you do and all the joy and love that you put into the running community. You guys are the best.
All right, athletes. Here's the drill. Time to shape up your diet. Carissa, give them the goods.
All right, John. Today on Healthier You, it's just a simple 3 words that I want to give to everybody during the holiday season. Because we stress and stress and stress about the overeating this time of year or the holiday weight gain. And really, it's the in-between things that make the big difference. It's not the meals. The Thanksgiving is one day. Christmas is one day. But the thing that we want to focus on right now is being mindful with our food. If we're going to eat something that is 7,000 calories and it's delicious, we're going to sit down and we're going to eat it and we're going to enjoy it. So, John, I encourage anybody out there that wants to be on a weight loss journey through the month of December to do one thing for me. Anytime you eat, I want you to put your food on a plate, sit in a chair, and eat it at a table. We're not standing, eating the Chex Mix, just grabbing a few bites. If we want to do that, we're going to put it and we're going to sit. It's going to make us be a little more mindful every time we eat. And when you do that, you're going to notice that maybe I didn't need to just grab that candy and walk out the door or that cookie, and that you enjoyed it more. You're nodding, you're making faces. What do you think of that strategy?
I think you've been speaking to my wife, because there's a thing where if I want potato chips, I will take the bag of potato chips, open it, walk around with it. My wife, on the other hand, who's, as we've discussed, so much smarter than me and clearly in better shape, though, you know, I've set the bar low. She will put it in a bowl, and I will find at the end of that I'm satiated without having eaten an entire bag of potato chips. So I think it's good, if disturbing for someone like me, to get that information, but probably a good way to approach your holiday eating.
Well, you won't listen to your wife.
7,000 calorie things. Those 7,000 calorie things, there's just too many of them at this time.
So it's just about putting mindfulness in it, because I don't want anybody going through the holidays stressed, counting calories, restrictive diets. That's not going to work. This is a simple cognitive technique that I just want you guys to take forward. Try it. Don't do the wander snacking. Sit down. Enjoy. And then when you get to January, let's revamp. Let's refocus. That's where Healthier You comes into play. It is my 12-week nutrition course. We're going to have monthly chats. We're going to help you get the education and more cognitive strategies to make those lifelong changes. Go to GallowayCourse.com. You can sign up now and use the code PODCAST.
I'm sorry, I was going to say, I didn't know the term wander snacking, but now I'm going to use it more often than snacking. I probably should.
And pockets are what? Snack holes. So those are all all the good things.
Learn something every day. All right, thanks for tuning in, everyone. Before we wrap up, we want to give a special shout out to our friend Sarah Akers with Runs on Magic. Now, Sarah is a passionate Run Disney enthusiast. She loves nothing more than helping you plan those magical Run Disney weekends. But with her expertise, the possibilities are endless. Whether you're dreaming of a honeymoon escape, an all-inclusive girls trip, a boys trip to Las Vegas, a family cruise, international adventure, whatever it is, Sarah is here to make it happen. Best part? Her travel planning services are completely complimentary. Sarah creates personalized itineraries and specializes in Run Disney, Universal, and cruise vacations. And for our listeners, she's offering a special promo. Use the code 321GO when requesting your vacation quote, and you could receive up to a $200 Disney gift card or booking credit, depending on your destination. You can connect with Sarah on Instagram at RunsOnMagic for the latest offers and more, or reach out to her directly at RunsOnMagicTravel@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Sarah.
Thank you to Allie. Maybe John and I will get our bus in the New York City Marathon. We'll see, but we will see you soon. January, Dopey, it's coming close. Thank you to Weston, our editor. We'll see you real soon.
Bye-bye.